liked a particular food, he will not like it now. New foods may confuse him. If the person insists on eating only one or two things, and if all efforts at persuasion or disguising foods fail, you'll need to ask the doctor about vitamins and diet supplements. Hoarding food. Some people save food and hide it in their room. This is a problem if it attracts insects or mice. Some people will give this up if they are frequently reassured that they can have a snack at any time. Leave a cookie jar where the person who has dementia can find it and remind him where it is. Some families give the person a container with a tightly fitting lid to keep snacks in. You may need to remind him to keep the snacks in the container. Others persuade the person to trade their old, spoiled food for fresh food. If the person has a complicating illness that requires a special diet, such as diabetes, it may be necessary to put foods he should not eat where he can't get them and allow him only those foods he should have. Remember, he may lack the judgment to decide responsibly between his craving and his well-being. Because a proper diet is important to his health, you may have to be responsible for preventing him from getting foods he shouldn't have, even if he vigorously objects. A locksmith can put a lock on the refrigerator door if necessary. Childproof locks will secure cabinets. Nibbling. Sometimes a person seems to forget that he ate and will ask for food again right after a meal. He may want to eat all the time. Try setting out a tray of small, nutritious nibbles, such as small crackers or cheese cubes. Perhaps he'll take one at a time and be satisfied. If weight gain is a problem, put out carrots or celery. Eating things he should not eat. People who have dementia may be unable to recognize that some things are not good to eat or not good in large quantities. You may need to put out of sight foods like salt, vinegar, oil, or Worcestershire sauce, large amounts of which can make a person sick. Some people will eat non-food items like soap, the soil in planters, or sponges. This probably results from damage to perception and memory. If such behavior occurs, you will need to keep those objects out of sight. Many people do not develop this problem, so we don't recommend removing these objects unless a problem does occur. Not eating or spitting foods out. Some of the medications given to people who have dementia make the mouth and throat dry, rendering many foods unpalatable or hard to swallow. Your pharmacist can tell you which drugs have this effect. Mix food with juice or water and offer the person a sip of water with each bite. Sometimes the mouth and throat can be so dry as to be painful and can make the person cranky. Offer fluids frequently. Not swallowing. Sometimes a person will carry food around in his mouth but not swallow it because he has forgotten how to chew or swallow. This is an apraxia and is best handled by giving the person soft foods that don't require much chewing, such as chopped meat, gelatin, and thick liquids. If he doesn't swallow pills, crush them and mix them with food. Check with your pharmacist first. Some medications should not be crushed. Malnutrition. People who have dementia can easily become malnourished, even when their caregivers are doing the best they can. Malnutrition and dehydration contribute to the person's overall poor health, increase his suffering, and shorten his life. Malnutrition affects the way the entire body functions, including how quickly a person recovers from an illness and how quickly a wound heals. It's possible to be overweight and still not be getting needed protein, minerals, or vitamins. People who have difficulty swallowing or who have had a stroke are especially at risk of malnutrition. Many residents of nursing homes are malnourished, and some are not getting enough fluids. If your relative is in a nursing home, insist that the staff evaluate his nutritional status and treat any problems. Weight loss. People who have dementia lose weight for all the same reasons that other people do. Therefore, if someone is losing weight and is not on a diet, the first step is to consult his physician. Weight loss often indicates a treatable problem or a disease unrelated to the dementia. Do not assume that it signals a decline. It's important that the physician search carefully for any contributory illness. Is the person constipated? Has the person had a new small stroke? Is the person depressed? Depression can account for weight loss, even in a person who has dementia. Poorly fitting dentures and sore teeth or gums can contribute to weight loss. Weight loss very late in the illness may be a part of the disease process itself. Certainly, all other possible causes should be considered. When a person is still eating and yet losing weight, he may be pacing, agitated, or so active that he's burning up more calories than he's taking in. Offer nutritious, substantial snacks between meals and before bedtime. Some clinicians think that several small meals and frequent snacks help prevent this kind of weight loss. Sometimes all that's needed to get a person to eat better is a calm, supportive environment. You may have to experiment before you find the arrangement that best encourages the person to eat. Be sure the food tastes good. Offer the person his favorite foods. Offer only one thing at a time and don't rush him. People who have dementia often eat slowly. Frequently offer snacks. Gently remind him to eat. Eating problems are common in assisted living facilities and nursing homes. Most people eat better in a small group or at a table with one other person in a quiet room. Sometimes it's best if the nursing facility sets aside space to serve a few people who have dementia away from a large, noisy dining room. Sometimes nursing home staff members are too rushed to coax a person to eat. A familiar family member may have better success. Homemade goodies may be more appealing than institutional food. One person who had dementia ate better when her back was gently stroked while she was being fed. Another person who had dementia responded to a low dose of medication that calms behavior, given 1 hour before meals. You may give a person who's not eating well a liquid, high-calorie diet supplement like Ensure or Sustacal. You could purchase these by the case from most pharmacies and discount warehouses. They contain vitamins, minerals, calories, and proteins the person needs. They come in different flavors. The person may like some flavors or products better than others. Offer this as the beverage with a meal or as a milkshake between meals. Consult your physician about using these products. Choking. Sometimes people who have dementia have difficulty coordinating the act of swallowing and choke on their food. If the person has difficulty changing his facial expression, or if he has had a stroke, he may also have trouble chewing or swallowing. When this occurs, it's important to guard against choking. Don't give the person foods that he may forget to chew thoroughly, such as small, hard candy, nuts, carrots, chewing gum, or popcorn. Soft, thick foods are less likely to cause choking. Easy-to-handle foods include chopped meat, soft-boiled eggs, canned fruit, and frozen yogurt. Foods can be ground in a blender. Seasoning will make them more appealing. You can mix a liquid and a solid, for example, broth and mashed potatoes, to make swallowing easier. If the person has trouble swallowing, be sure he is sitting up straight with his head slightly forward, never tilted back, when he eats. He should be sitting in the same position in which a well person would sit at a table. He should remain sitting for 15 minutes after he eats. Don't feed a person who is agitated or sleepy. Foods like cereal with milk may cause choking. The two textures, solid and liquid, make it hard for him to know whether to chew or swallow. Some fluids are easier to swallow than others. If a person tends to choke on fluids like water, try a thicker liquid, like apricot or tomato juice. A nurse can help you cope with this problem. First aid for choking. A nurse or the Red Cross can teach you a simple technique that can save the life of a choking person. It takes only a few minutes to learn this simple skill. Everyone should know how to do it. If the person appears to be choking but can talk, cough, or breathe, do not interfere. Encourage him to keep coughing. If the person cannot talk, cough, or breathe, and he may point to his throat or turn bluish, you must help him. If he is in a chair or standing, stand behind him, then reach around him and lock or overlap your two hands in the middle of his abdomen or belly below the ribs. Pull hard and quickly back and up toward you. If he's lying down, turn him so he is face up, put your two hands in the middle of his belly, and push. This Heimlich maneuver will force air up through the throat and cause the food to fly out like a cork out of a bottle. You can practice where to put your hands, but you should not push hard on a breathing person. When to consider tube feeding. People who have dementia stop eating for many reasons. They may have difficulty swallowing due to an apraxia, ulcers in the esophagus, an esophageal obstruction or narrowing, or over-medication. They may dislike the food being offered, do not recognize it as food, lose the sense of feeling hungry or thirsty, or be sitting in an uncomfortable position. They may have cancer or depression, both of which can cause people to stop eating and can occur even in a person with advanced dementia. People who have dementia may stop eating when they're experiencing a concurrent illness. They may resume eating when they recover. However, some people with dementia reach a point in their illness when they have lost the ability to eat or swallow. Whenever a person who has dementia loses a significant amount of weight, good care requires that a physician carefully review the person's medical status, even if the dementia is very advanced. Then, if weight loss cannot be stopped, you and the doctors are left with an ethical dilemma. Should you allow the insertion of a feeding tube directly into the stomach, a gastrostomy or PEG tube? Or should you allow the person who has dementia to die? This decision is different for each person and family. It's helpful if the family has talked about this issue before it arises, or as soon as the person begins to have difficulty swallowing or losing weight. It's important to discuss all aspects of the decision to place a feeding tube with a physician who knows the person well. There's no evidence that gastrostomy tubes prolong the lives of people who have dementia. There's no evidence that they prevent pneumonia, and no evidence that they lower the risk of aspiration of stomach contents into the lungs. Many physicians believe that a gastrostomy tube, a tube that goes through the abdominal wall and opens directly into the stomach, is more comfortable for the person who has dementia than the previously used nasogastric tube, a tube that goes through the nose, down the esophagus, and into the stomach. Patients are less likely to pull out gastrostomy tubes, and these tubes need to be changed less often. They're put in place from within. That is, the person undergoes an endoscopy, in which a gastroenterologist places a tube through the mouth, down the esophagus, and into the stomach, and then pushes the tube through the stomach wall and through the abdominal wall to the outside. Because there's an opening through the abdomen, there is a slight risk of an adverse outcome. If the person has dementia, someone will be required to sign a consent form for this procedure. Feeding through a gastrostomy or PEG tube usually takes place over many hours, and machines are available that can regulate the rate of flow, although gravity is often all that's needed. People who have dementia sometimes try to pull out PEG tubes and occasionally succeed. We don't know whether this means they find the tube uncomfortable or whether they think that it doesn't belong there, or it may happen because they're restless. People who pull out their tubes may have their hands restrained, further adding to their discomfort, but often covering the tube when it's not in use will lessen this risk. A visiting nurse can show you how to manage either kind of tube at home. We know very little about the psychological experience of the person who has dementia who stops eating and is not tube-fed, but our clinical experience suggests that discomfort is very uncommon. Most experts agree that dehydration itself somehow diminishes or abolishes the experience of thirst and hunger, but we can't be sure this is true. While knowledge gained from people dying from other causes may not apply to people who have dementia, Cognitively normal individuals who have recovered from severe dehydration do not report feelings of discomforting thirst. In the end, you and your family must make the decision you feel most comfortable with. If the person has previously written or stated a preference, this should help guide your decision. But ultimately, it's the family member or guardian with medical decision-making power who makes the decision. Exercise. Remaining physically fit is an important part of good health. We don't know all the ways that exercise contributes to good health, but we do know that it's important for both you and the person who has dementia to get enough exercise. We don't know the relationship between tension and exercise either, but many people who lead intense, demanding lives are convinced that physical exercise enables them to handle pressure more effectively. Perhaps exercise will refresh you after the daily burdens of caring for a chronically ill person. Several studies have found that people who have dementia and exercise regularly are calmer and do less agitated pacing. Some have observed that motor skills seem to be retained longer if they're used regularly. Exercise is a good way to keep a person involved in activities because it's often easier for people who have dementia to use their bodies than to think and remember. Perhaps the most important fact is that sufficient exercise seems to help people sleep at night and keep their bowel movements regular. You may have to exercise with the person who has dementia. The kind of exercise you do depends on what you and he enjoy. There's no point to adding an odious exercise program to your life. Consider what the person did before he developed dementia and find ways to modify that activity so that it can continue. Sometimes an exercise project can also be a time for you and the person who has dementia to share closeness and affection without having to talk. How much exercise can an older person safely do? If you or the person who has dementia has high blood pressure or a heart condition, check with the doctor before you do anything. If both of you can do normal walking around the house, climb steps, and shop for groceries, you can carry out a moderate exercise program. Always start a new activity gradually and build up slowly. If an exercise causes either of you stiffness, pain, or swelling, do less of it or change to a gentler activity. Check the person's feet for blisters or bruises if you begin walking. Walking is excellent exercise. Try to take the person outside for a short walk in all but the worst weather. The movement and the fresh air may help him feel and sleep better. If the weather is too rainy or cold, drive to an indoor shopping mall. Make a game of window shopping. Be sure both of you have comfortable, low-heeled shoes and soft, absorbent cotton socks. You may gradually build up the distance you walk, but avoid steep hills. It may be easier for a forgetful person to walk the same route each day. Point out scenery, people, smells, and so on as you walk. Don't worry about repeating the same conversation day after day. Dancing is good exercise. If the person enjoyed dancing before he became ill, encourage some sort of movements to music. If the person played golf or tennis, he may be able to enjoy hitting the ball around long after he becomes unable to play a real game. People who have dementia often enjoy doing calisthenics as part of a group, for example, in a daycare setting. If you're doing exercises in a group or at home, try having him imitate what you are doing. If he has trouble with specific movements, try gently helping him move. If the person is able to keep his balance, standing exercises are better than those done sitting in a chair. However, if balance is a problem, do the same exercises from a chair. If the person becomes bedfast because of an acute illness, ask the doctor or the physical therapist to help you get him moving again once he recovers from the acute illness. This may postpone the time when he becomes permanently bedfast. Even people who are confined to bed can exercise. However, exercises for seriously chronically ill people must be planned by a physical therapist so they don't aggravate other conditions and are not dangerous to a person who has poor coordination, poor balance, or rigid muscles. Exercise should be done at the same time each day, in a quiet orderly way so it doesn't create confusion that would add to the person's agitation. Follow the same sequence of exercises. Make the exercises fun and encourage the person to remember them. If the person has a catastrophic reaction, stop and try again later. When a person has been sick or inactive, he may become weak and tire more easily. His joints may become stiff. Regular, gentle exercise can help keep his joints and his muscles in healthy condition. When stiffness or weakness is caused by diseases such as arthritis or injury, a physical or occupational therapist can plan an exercise program that may help prevent further stiffness or weakness. If the person has any other health problems, or if you're planning a vigorous exercise program, discuss this with your physician before you begin. You should notify your doctor of any new physical problems and of marked changes in existing ones. Recreation. Recreation, having fun, and enjoying life are important for everyone. An illness that causes dementia does not mean an end to enjoying life. It may mean that you will need to make a special effort to find things that give pleasure to the affected person. As the person's illness progresses, it may become more difficult to find things he can still enjoy. In reality, you may already be doing as much as you can. Adding an activity program may further exhaust you and add to the stress in the household. Instead, look for things you can still do that both of you will enjoy. Consider an adult daycare program or an in-home visitor program. The sheltered social setting of adult daycare may provide just the right balance of stimulation and security. If they're able to adjust to the new setting, people who have dementia enjoy the camaraderie with other people who also have memory problems. Some in-home visitor programs offer occupational or recreational therapy services. These professionals can help you plan exercises or activities the person will enjoy. Both visiting at home and daycare offer social activities and opportunities for success and fun. If at all possible, involve the person in such a program. People who have dementia often lose the ability to entertain themselves. For some, idleness leads to pacing or other repetitive behaviors. The person may resist your suggestion of things to do. Often, this is because he doesn't understand what you're suggesting. Try beginning an activity and then inviting him to join you. Select simple adult activities rather than childish games. Select an activity that will be fun rather than one that is supposed to be therapeutic. Look for things that the person will enjoy and that he'll succeed at, like sanding wood, playing with a child, cranking an ice cream maker. The amount of activity a person is able to tolerate varies widely. Plan activity when the person is rested. Help whenever the person becomes anxious or irritable, and break the activity down into simple steps. Previously enjoyed activities may remain important and enjoyable even for people who have serious impairment. However, the things the person used to enjoy, such as hobbies, guests, concerts, or going out to dinner, can become too complicated to be fun for someone who is easily confused. These must be replaced by simpler joys, although it can be hard for family members to understand that simple things can now give just as much pleasure. Music is a delightful resource for many people. Even individuals who are severely impaired usually retain the capacity to enjoy old, familiar songs. Some people will sing only when someone sits close by and encourages them. Others may be able to use a CD player or radio with large knobs. People are sometimes still able to play the piano or sing if they learned this skill earlier. Some memory-impaired people enjoy television. Others become upset when they can't understand the story anymore. Television precipitates catastrophic reactions in some people. Some people enjoy DVDs or videos of old movies. Many people who have dementia enjoy seeing old friends, although they sometimes become upset. If this happens, try having only one or two people visit at a time instead of a group. It's often the confusion of several people visiting at once that's upsetting. Ask visitors to stay for shorter periods and explain to them in advance the reason for the person's forgetfulness and other behaviors. Some families enjoy going out to dinner, and many people who have dementia retain most of their social grace as well. Others embarrass the family by their messy eating. It's helpful to order for the person and select simple foods that can be eaten neatly. Remove unnecessary glasses and silverware. Some families have found that it helps to explain to the wait staff discreetly that the person has dementia and cannot order for himself. Consider the hobbies and interests the person had before he became ill and look for ways he can still enjoy these. Often, for example, people who liked to read will continue to enjoy leafing through newspapers, magazines, and books after they can no longer make sense of the text. Sometimes a person puts away a hobby or interest and refuses to pick it up again. This often happens with something a person had done well and can no longer do well. It can seem degrading to encourage a person to do a simplified version of a once fine skill unless he particularly enjoys it. It may be better to find new kinds of recreation. Everyone enjoys experiencing things through the senses. You probably enjoy watching a brilliant sunset, smelling a flower, or tasting your favorite food. People who have dementia are often more isolated and may not be able to seek out experiences to stimulate their senses. Try pointing out a pretty picture, a bird singing, a familiar smell or taste. Like you, the person will enjoy certain sensations more and others less. Many families have found that people who have dementia enjoy a ride in the car. If the person has always enjoyed animals, he may respond with delight to pets. Some cats and dogs seem to have an instinctive way with brain-impaired people. Some individuals enjoy a stuffed animal or doll. A stuffed toy can be either childish and demeaning or comforting. Much depends on the attitude of the people around the person who has dementia. Our opinion is that the person should be allowed to have a stuffed toy if he seems to enjoy it. As the dementia progresses and the person develops trouble with coordination and language, it's easy to forget his need to experience pleasant things and to enjoy himself. Never overlook the importance of hand-holding, touching, hugging, and loving. Often, when there is no other way we can find to communicate with a person, he'll respond to touching. Touch is an important part of human communication. A back rub or a foot or hand massage can be calming. You may enjoy just sitting and holding hands. It's a good way to share some time when talking has become difficult or impossible. Meaningful activity. Much of what a well person does during the day has a purpose that gives meaning and importance to life. We work to make money, to serve others, to feel important. We may knit a sweater for a grandchild or bake a cake for a friend. We wash our hair and clothes so we will look nice and be clean. Such purposeful activities are important to us. They make us feel useful and needed. When the person who has dementia is unable to continue his usual activities, you need to help him find things to do that are important to him and still within his abilities. Such tasks should be meaningful and satisfying to him, whether they seem so to you or not. For example, folding and refolding towels might have meaning for some people, but not for others. Seeing themselves as volunteers rather than as patients is important to some people. This provides both a sense of worth and the benefit of participation. The person may be able to spade a garden for you and for the neighbors, or may be able to peel the vegetables or set the table when he's no longer able to prepare a complete meal. People can wind a ball of yarn, dust, or stack magazines while you do the housework. Encourage the person to do as much as he can for himself, although you can simplify tasks for him by breaking them down into steps or doing part of a task yourself. Most experts urge people who have dementia to exercise or do things that keep their minds active. There's some evidence that staying mentally and physically active can help postpone the onset of dementia for people who do not have thinking impairment. However, Once an illness that causes dementia has begun, keeping physically and mentally active may slow progression. Even more importantly, it can improve the quality of life of people who have dementia. It's important to consider the effect that any particular activity has on the person. Activities should be enjoyable, even if they're simple, such as petting the dog, talking with others, taking a walk, or sitting outside. If the person repeatedly shows signs of being upset, including irritability, stubbornness, crying, or refusing to do the activity, then it has become a stressor instead of a pleasure. Pushing a person to do something that upsets him is not helpful. Personal hygiene. For a person who has an illness that causes dementia, his needs in personal care will depend on the type and extent of the brain damage. He'll be able to care for himself in the early stages of the disease, but may gradually begin to neglect himself and will eventually need total help. Problems often arise over getting a person to change his clothes or take a bath. "I already changed," the person may tell you, or he may turn the tables and make it sound as if you're wrong to suggest such a thing. A daughter says, "I can't get her to change clothes. She has had the same clothes on for a week. She sleeps in them. When I tell her to change, she says she already did, or she yells at me, 'Who do you think you are, telling me when to change my clothes?'" A husband relates, "She screams for help the whole time I am bathing her. She'll open the windows and yell, 'Help, I'm being robbed.'" A person who has an illness that causes dementia may become depressed or apathetic and lose any desire to clean up. He may be losing the ability to remember how much time has passed. It doesn't seem like a week since he changed clothes. To have someone telling him he needs to change his clothes may embarrass him. How would you feel if someone came up to you and told you that you should change your clothes? Dressing and bathing are intensely personal activities. We each have our own individual ways of doing things. Some of us take showers, some take tub baths, some of us bathe in the morning, some bathe at night, some of us change clothes twice a day, some every other day. But each of us is quite set in our way of doing things. Sometimes when a family member begins to help the confused person, the helper inadvertently overlooks these established habits. The change in routine can be upsetting. A generation or two ago, many people did not wash and change as frequently as we do today. Once a week may have been the way the person did things in his childhood. We begin to bathe and dress ourselves as small children. It is a basic indicator of our independence. Moreover, bathing and dressing are private activities. Many people have never, as an adult, completely bathed and dressed in front of anyone else. Having other people's hands and eyes on one's naked, aging, not-so-beautiful body is an acutely uncomfortable experience. When we offer to help with something a person has always done for himself, something everybody does for himself and does in private, it's a strong statement that this person is not able to do things for himself any longer, that he has, in fact, become like a child who must be told when to dress and must have help. Changing clothes and bathing involve making multiple decisions. A person must select among many socks, shirts or tops, and pants or skirts. When a person begins to realize he or she can't do this, and when looking at a drawer full of blue, green, and black socks becomes overwhelmingly confusing, it can be easier just not to change. Such factors as these often precipitate catastrophic reactions involving bathing and dressing. Still, you are faced with the problem of keeping this person clean. Begin by trying to understand the person's feelings and his need for privacy and independence. Know that his behavior is a product of his brain impairment and is not deliberately offensive. Look for ways to simplify the number of decisions involved in bathing and dressing without taking away his independence. Bathing. When a person refuses to take a bath, part of the problem may be that the activities associated with bathing have become too confusing and complicated. For others, it is anxiety, or the fact that the caregiver must intrude into the person's private space. Look for ways to reduce these factors. Be calm and quiet. Simplify the task. Wrap the person in a robe or towel and help them wash under it. Try to follow as many of the person's old routines as possible while you encourage him to bathe and at the same time simplify the job for him. If a man has always shaved first, then showered, then eaten breakfast, he's most likely to cooperate with your request if you time his bath before breakfast, then lay out his clothes and towels and start the water. Be calm and gentle when you help with a bath. Avoid getting into discussions about whether a bath is needed. Instead, tell the person one step at a time what to do in preparation for the bath. Avoid, "Dad, I want you to take a bath right after breakfast." Right after breakfast means he has to remember something. Avoid responding to, "I don't need a bath," by saying, "Oh, yes, you do. You haven't had a bath in a week." You wouldn't like to have him say that to you, especially if you couldn't remember when you last had a bath. Try, "Dad, your bath water is ready." "I don't need a bath. Here's your towel. Now unbutton your shirt." His mind may focus on the buttons instead of on the argument. You can gently help him if you see him having difficulty. "Now stand up. Undo your pants, Dad." "I don't need a bath." "Now step into the tub." One daughter drew her father's bath, got everything ready, and then, when he wandered down the hall, said, "Oh, look at this lovely bath water. As long as it is here, why not take a bath? It would be terrible to waste it." Her father, who had always pinched pennies, yielded. One wife told her husband, "As soon as your bath is over, you and I will eat those good cookies Janie brought." Some families have found that the person who has dementia will let an aide in uniform or another family member bathe him. Think over the person's lifelong bath habits. Did he bathe or shower? In the morning or at night? If all else fails, give partial baths or sponge baths. Watch the person's skin for rashes or red areas. Bathing should be a regular routine, done the same way at the same time of day. The person will come to expect this and may put up less resistance. If bathing continues to be difficult, it's not necessary for the person to bathe every day. Many accidents occur in the bath. Assemble everything in advance and never turn away or leave the person. Always check the temperature of the bath or shower water, even if the person has been successfully doing this for himself. The ability to gauge safe temperatures can be lost quite suddenly. Avoid using bubble bath or bath oils that can make the tub slippery. These can also contribute to vaginal infections in women. It can be difficult to get a person in and out of a tub, especially if he's clumsy or heavy. An unsteady person can slip and fall while stepping over the side. An unsteady person may also fall while standing in the shower. Install grab bars that the person can use to help himself in and out of the tub or shower and that he can hold on to while he bathes. Grab bars are essential for safe care. Use a bath seat in either a tub or a shower. A bath transfer bench straddles the side of the tub. You help the person swing his legs over the rim, and then he slides along the bench so that he's sitting on the bench inside the walls of the tub. In the next section, we'll talk about locating bath supplies. Many families have told us that a bath seat and a handheld hose greatly reduce the bath time crisis. You have control of the water and the mess. The seat is safer, and the controlled flow of water is less upsetting to the person. The bath seat reduces the person's anxiety because he feels more secure, and it reduces your need to bend and stretch. The hose makes rinsing the person and washing his hair much easier. Never leave the person alone in the tub. Use only 2 or 3 inches of water. This way the person feels more secure and it's safer in case he slips. Put a rubber mat or non-skid decals on the bottom of the tub. People can often continue to wash themselves if you gently remind them one step at a time of each area to wash. Sometimes it's embarrassing for a family member to make sure that the genital area is thoroughly washed, but rashes can develop there, so see that this is done. Be sure that you or the person who has dementia has washed in folds of flesh and under breasts. Use a bath mat that will not slip for the person to step out onto, and be sure there are no puddles on the floor. It may be helpful to replace bath mats with bathroom carpeting that does not slip, soaks up puddles, and is washable. If the person still dries himself, check to see that he doesn't forget some areas. If you dry the person, be sure he is completely dry. Use body powder, baby powder, or cornstarch under women's breasts and in creases and folds of skin. Cornstarch is an inexpensive, odorless, and non-allergenic substitute for talcum powder. Baking soda is an effective substitute if the person resists using a deodorant. While the person is undressed, check for red areas of skin, rashes, or sores. If any red areas or sores appear, ask your physician to help you manage them. Pressure sores, also called decubitus ulcers, develop quickly on people who sit or lie down much of the time. Use body lotion on dry skin. There are unscented lotions for men. Locating care supplies. Many websites, large drugstores, and medical supply houses carry the products we recommend, including bath supplies, toilet safety frames, commodes, Dyson, grab bars, incontinence supplies, canes, wheelchairs, and devices to build up the handles on eating utensils and toothbrushes. Supplies come in a variety of designs to fit different bathrooms and different needs. Ask if Medicare, Medicaid, or your major insurance provider will cover any supplies. A pharmacist can help you select the products that will be best for your needs. A toilet safety frame provides a set of arms that fit around the toilet and help the person lower himself to and lift himself off the toilet. They also help to prevent him from toppling sideways. Raised, built-up toilet seats make it easier for people to get off and on the seat and easier to transfer a person from a wheelchair to the toilet. The seat should fasten securely to the toilet so it doesn't slip when a person sits on it. Padded or soft toilet seats are more comfortable for the person who must sit for some time. This is especially important for the person who develops pressure sores easily. You can rent portable commodes that can be placed near a person's bed or on the ground floor so that the person doesn't have to climb stairs. A variety of urinals and bedpans are available. Towel rods and the bar on the soap dish in many homes and apartments are often glued to the wall or fastened only into the wall board. They may come loose if a person grabs them for balance or to lift himself up. Make sure they're installed by someone knowledgeable about carpentry to ensure they're anchored into the stud in the wall. Make sure they're designed for sturdiness. Dressing. If all of the person's socks will go with all of his slacks, he doesn't have to decide which is right to wear with what. Hang ties, scarves, or accessories on the hanger with the shirt or dress they go with. Eliminate belts, scarves, sweaters, ties, and other accessories that are likely to be put on wrong. Lay out a clean outfit for the person who has trouble making choices. Laying out clothes in the order in which he puts them on may also help. Put away out-of-season or rarely worn clothes so they don't add to the decisions the person must make. If the person refuses to change clothes, avoid getting in an argument. Make the suggestion again later. As the disease progresses, it becomes difficult for a person to put clothes on right side out and in the correct sequence. Buttons, zippers, shoelaces, and belt buckles become impossible to manage. If the person can no longer manage buttons, replace them with Velcro tape, which you can purchase in a fabric store. People can often manage this after their fingers and brain can no longer cope with buttons. One wife, sensitive to her husband's need to continue to dress himself independently, bought him clothes that were reversible. She bought attractive T-shirts that didn't look bad if they were worn backward and that didn't have buttons, pants with elastic waistbands, and tube socks. Tube socks don't have heels, so it takes less skill to put them on. Slip-on shoes are easier than shoes with laces or ties. Women can look pretty in reversible slip-on blouses and reversible wraparound or elastic waistband shirts or slacks. Loose-fitting clothing is easier to manage. Select clothing that's washable and that doesn't need ironing. There's no reason to add to your workload. Avoid clothing with busy patterns that are difficult to match. Women's underwear is difficult for a person who has dementia to manage and a mystery to many husbands. Buy soft, loose-fitting panties. It won't matter if they are put on backward or wrong side out. If you must put a bra on a woman, ask her to lean forward to settle her breasts in the cups. Pantyhose are difficult to put on, and knee socks or garter belts are bad for people with poor circulation. Short cotton socks may be best to wear at home. You'll find clothing designed for ease of dressing people who have dementia and those in wheelchairs on the internet. Tell the person, one step at a time, what to do or what you are doing. Go with what works. If the person is dressed oddly, let it be. Grooming. Have the person's hair cut in an attractive, short style that's easy to wash and care for. Avoid a style that requires setting. People who have always gone to the beauty shop or barber shop may still enjoy doing so. If this is too upsetting an experience, it may be possible to arrange for a beautician or a barber to come to your home. It may be safer and easier on your back to wash the person's hair in the kitchen sink rather than the tub, unless you have a hose attachment in the bathtub. Invest in a hose attachment for the sink. Be sure you rinse the hair well. It should squeak when rubbed through your fingers. You will need to trim fingernails and toenails, or check to see that he can still do this. Long toenails can curl back against the toes and become quite painful. Encourage the person to get dressed and to look nice. Moping around in a bathrobe will not help his morale. If a woman has always worn makeup, it may be good for her to continue to wear simple makeup. It's not difficult for a husband to put powder and lipstick on his wife. Use pastel colors and a light touch on an older woman. Skip the eye makeup. When the bath and dressing are finished, encourage the person to look in the mirror and see how nice he looks, even if you're exhausted and exasperated. Have the rest of the family compliment him also. Praise and encouragement are important in helping him continue to feel good about himself, even when a task he has always been able to do, such as dressing, has become too much for him. Oral hygiene. With all the other chores of caring for a chronically ill person, it's easy to forget what we can't see, but good oral hygiene is important for the person's comfort and for his health. A person who appears to be able to care for himself in other ways may, in fact, be forgetting to care for his teeth or dentures. Make oral care a part of a regular, expected routine and do it calmly. You'll encounter less resistance. Select a time of day when the person is most cooperative. If the person does become upset, stop and try again later. Because you want the person to be as independent as possible, you can assume the responsibility of remembering, but letting the person do as much of the actual care as possible. One reason people stop caring for their teeth or dentures is that these are complicated tasks with many steps, and they become confused about what to do next. Early in the illness, you'll need to remind the person to brush his teeth. Later, you will need to instruct him step by step. As he becomes more confused, simplify your instructions by breaking the activity into distinct steps. Instead of brush your teeth, say, hold the toothbrush, then I'll put on the toothpaste, then put it in your mouth, and so on. It may help to have the person imitate you. Remind the person to rinse and spit. When you must brush the person's teeth for him, experiment with different shaped brushes and try standing behind him. Dentures are particularly troublesome. If they don't fit just right or if a person is not applying the denture adhesive properly, they interfere with chewing. The natural response is to stop eating those things one can't chew. This can lead to inadequate nutrition or constipation. Dentures should be in place when a person is eating. If they don't fit properly or are uncomfortable, insist that the dentist fix them. If a person forgets to take out his dentures and clean them, or if he refuses to let you do it, he can develop painful sores on his gums, which can further interfere with eating a proper diet. If you take over the care of the person's dentures, you must remove them daily, clean them, and check the gums for irritation. His dentist can show you how to do this. Check the person's mouth for sores and be alert to changes in chewing or eating that might indicate dental problems. Find a dentist who has experience with people who have memory problems. There are many dentists who are gentle and patient and able to continue the person's dental care. Healthy teeth or properly fitting dentures are critically important. People who have dementia tend not to chew well and to choke easily. Dental problems make this worse. Even mild nutritional problems caused by sore teeth can increase the person's confusion or cause constipation. Sores in the mouth can lead to other problems and can increase the person's impairment. Incontinence, wetting or soiling. People who have illnesses that cause dementia may begin to wet themselves or have bowel movements in their clothing. This is called, respectively, urinary incontinence and bowel or fecal incontinence. The two are separate problems, and one often occurs without the other. There are many causes of incontinence that are treatable, so it's important to begin by having a doctor assess the problem. Urinating and moving one's bowels are natural human functions. However, ever since childhood, we have been taught that these are private activities. Many of us have also been taught that they are nasty, dirty, or socially unacceptable. In addition, we associate caring for our own bodily functions in private with independence and personal dignity. When another person has to help us, it's distressing for both the helper and the disabled person. Often, too, individuals find the urine or bowel movements of others disgusting and may gag or vomit when cleaning up. It's important for both family members and professional caregivers to be aware of their own strong feelings in these areas. Urinary incontinence. Urinary incontinence has many causes, some of which respond well to treatment. Ask yourself the following questions. If the person is a woman, is she leaking rather than completely emptying her bladder, especially when she laughs, coughs, lifts something, or makes some other sudden exertion? Light pad incontinence wear is inconspicuous under clothing and gives a person confidence to continue to go out in public. Men may dribble. There are also light pads designed for men. Do accidents happen only at certain times of day, such as at night? It's helpful to keep a diary for several days of the times accidents occur, the times the person successfully uses the toilet, and the times the person eats or drinks. How often does the person urinate? Is the urination painful? Did the incontinence begin suddenly? Has the person's confusion suddenly gotten worse? Does the incontinence occur occasionally or intermittently? Is the person living in a new place? Is the person urinating in improper places, such as in closets or in flower pots? This is different from the person who wets himself and his clothing wherever he happens to be. Do accidents happen when the person cannot get to the bathroom on time? Are they happening on the way to the bathroom? When incontinence occurs before the late stages of Alzheimer's disease, each disease is different, it is usually not directly caused by the disease. You may be able to solve the problem. Whenever incontinence begins, it's important to check with the doctor. You can help her diagnose the problems by having the answers to the questions we just asked. If the person has a fever, report this to the doctor at once. Don't let a physician dismiss incontinence without carefully exploring all treatable causes. Incontinence may be brought on by chronic or acute bladder infections, uncontrolled diabetes, a fecal impaction, an enlarged prostate, dehydration, medications, and many other medical problems. Leaking can be caused by an inflexible bladder, a weakened sphincter muscle, or other conditions that are potentially treatable. It might seem that giving less fluid would reduce incontinence, but this can be dangerous because it can lead to dehydration. A first step in addressing incontinence is to be sure that the person is getting enough fluid to stimulate the bladder to work. Both too little and too much fluid can be bad. If you're uncertain how much fluid the person should have, ask your doctor or nurse. A doctor or nurse can also determine whether the person is dehydrated. As the illness progresses, the person may not experience or may be unable to respond correctly to feeling the need to urinate, or may be unable to get up and get started in time to get to the toilet. You could solve this problem by regularly reminding the person to go to the bathroom. If the problem is that the person moves slowly, or uses a walker, or is clumsy and can't get to the bathroom in time, say, "Do you want to go to the bathroom before you sit down?" If the person must walk a distance to go to the toilet, try renting a commode, which brings the toilet closer to the person. You can also simplify clothing so the person can manipulate it easier and faster. Try Velcro tape instead of zippers or buttons. Can the person easily get up out of his chair? If he's sunk in a deep chair, he may not be able to get up in time. Remind him before it's too late. Sometimes people can't find the bathroom. This often happens in a new setting. A clear sign or a brightly painted door occasionally helps. People who urinate in waste baskets, closets, and flower pots may be unable to locate the bathroom or unable to remember the appropriate place. Some families find that putting a lid on the waste basket, locking closet doors, and taking the person to the bathroom on a regular schedule help. Remember that older people may have been taught as children to urinate outdoors or in a can by the bed. If so, it may be easier to supply them with a can than to clean up the wastebasket. Purchase washable chair cushion covers. Slide them on over a large garbage bag to waterproof cushions. If you have a favorite chair or rug that you're afraid will be damaged, take the easy way out and put it where the person won't use it. Sometimes people need help but are either unable to or embarrassed to ask for it. Restlessness or irritability may be an indication that the person needs to be taken to the toilet. Learn what the person's cues mean and be sure that sitters or other caregivers know also. If the person is incontinent at night, limit the amount of fluid he drinks after supper unless there is some medical reason why he needs extra fluid. The rest of the day, be sure he is getting plenty of fluids. Get him up once at night. It may be helpful to get a bedside commode he can use easily, especially if he has trouble moving around. Nightlights in the bathroom and bedroom greatly help, too. Buy a waterproof mattress before accidents begin and use waterproof pads for the bed. Falls often occur on the way to the bathroom at night. Make sure there are adequate lights and no throw rugs, that the person can get out of bed, and that he has slippers that are not slick-soled or floppy. Plan a regular schedule for toileting the person who no longer manages alone. An interval of every 2 hours is often most successful at preventing incontinence. As long as the person is ambulatory, you may be able to manage incontinence this way even late in the illness. A diary will provide you with the information you need to prevent many accidents. If you know when the person usually urinates, for example, immediately on awakening or about 10 a.m., an hour after he has his juice, you could take him to the toilet just before an accident would occur. This is, in fact, training yourself to his natural schedule. Many families find that they can tell when the person needs to go to the bathroom. He may become restless or pick at his clothes. If the person does not give you clues, routinely take him to the toilet every 2 or 3 hours. A regular schedule will avoid most accidents, reduce skin irritations, and make life easier for both of you. While it may be embarrassing to ask the person to go to the bathroom, this routine will save the person the humiliation of wetting himself. Certain nonverbal signals that tell us it's time or not time to urinate may influence some impaired people. Taking down one's underpants or opening one's fly or sitting down on a toilet seat can be clues to go. Dry clothes and being in bed or in public are signals to not go. Some people are unable to urinate when there are no-go clues, such as in the presence of another person or into a bedpan. Taking down panties when undressing a woman may cause her to urinate. You may be able to use such nonverbal clues to help a person go at the right time. One man urinated every morning as soon as he put his feet on the floor. If this is what's happening, you may be able to be prepared and catch the urine in a urinal. People may also be inhibited and unable to go when you're in the bathroom with them, or if you ask them to use a commode in a room that is not a bathroom. It is often this involuntary no-go response that leads families to say, "He wouldn't go when I took him, and then he wet his pants. I think he's only being difficult." Make the person comfortable and then step out of the room. Sometimes, if a person has trouble urinating, it may help to give him a glass of water with a straw and ask him to blow bubbles. This seems to help the urine start. Ask a nurse to show you how to press gently on the bladder to start the flow of urine. Sometimes a person asks to go to the bathroom every few minutes. If this is a problem, have the doctor see the person to determine whether there is a medical reason why the person feels he needs to urinate frequently. A urinary tract infection or certain medications can give a person this feeling, or can prevent his completely emptying his bladder. If his bladder is not completely empty, he'll soon feel the need to urinate again. Some doctors and nurses may dismiss incontinence as inevitable. It's true that some people who have dementia will eventually lose independent control of their functions, but many do not, and many causes of incontinence can be controlled. Even when the person has lost independent function, there's much you can do to make your workload easier and to reduce embarrassment for him. If you're having problems, ask for a referral to a nurse or a physician who has experience managing incontinence in people who have dementia. Bowel incontinence. Bowel incontinence, like urinary incontinence, should be discussed with a doctor. Abrupt onset or temporary incontinence may be the result of an infection, diarrhea, irritable bowel syndrome, medication, eating foods that stimulate the bowel to evacuate, constipation, or a fecal impaction. Be sure that the bathroom is comfortable and that the person can sit without discomfort or instability long enough to move his bowels. His feet should rest on the floor and he should have something to hold on to. A toilet safety seat will give him something to hold and will encourage a restless person to stay put. Try giving him something to do or letting him listen to music. Learn when the person usually moves his bowels and take him to the toilet at that time. Avoid reprimanding the person who has accidents. Consult your physician if the person may be constipated or have an impaction. Keep disposable adult washcloths on hand in case of a bowel accident. Skin cleansing products that liquefy stool and reduce odors make gentle cleaning much easier. Cleaning up. A person who remains in soiled or wet clothing can quickly develop irritated skin and sores. Watch for these. Keeping the skin clean and dry is the best protection against skin problems. The skin must be washed after each accident. Powder will keep the skin dry. There are creams that protect the skin from moisture and that help skin irritations. Use only creams designed for the perineal area. Using a catheter as a continuing way to manage urinary incontinence should be avoided if possible. The personal care of an incontinent person can seem degrading for him and unpleasant or disgusting to you. Therefore, some families have made a deliberate effort to use the cleanup time as a time to express affection. This can help to make a necessary task less unpleasant. There is apparel available for incontinent people. Should you use it? Professionals disagree over the use of incontinence wear. Some think that diapers are demoralizing and encourage infantile behavior. Some find that scheduled toileting is easier than managing incontinence wear. The answer lies in your own feelings about this and in the incontinent person's response. Incontinence clothing may make things easier for you and more comfortable for the person who has dementia. You may choose to use it only at nighttime. Nursing homes or residential homes should not routinely use diapers as a cost savings without considering the impact of the practice on the individual. We believe a toileting schedule is ideal when it works, but we recognize that some people who have dementia resist it, and others are incontinent even when a schedule is tried. The doctor or nurse will help you decide what's right for you. Disposable adult diapers and plastic outer pants are sold online and in grocery stores, big box stores, and drug stores. Some are more comfortable and stay on better if regular underpants are worn over them. Because of the negative feeling about the word diaper, these products are advertised as adult briefs or incontinence wear. There are many choices. Some are made so that one size fits all. Others are sized by the hip or waist measurement. Some are designed for men, others for women. Some are for people who are bedfast or bedbound. Some are disposable, and others have a disposable liner. Adult disposable washcloths are available for cleaning up and are much more convenient than having to launder extra cloths. Garments and pads are labeled for the amount of urine they'll hold. A full bladder may empty 8 to 10 ounces, about one cup of urine. You may have to experiment to find the style and absorbency that works best for you. Garments that don't fit or that are too saturated may leak. Don't expect the garment to hold more than one urination. Several products consist of outer washable pants that hold a disposable pad. The ideal is a soft, cool material in which the absorbent pad tends to draw urine away from the crotch so that the person's skin feels dry. It's helpful if the garment is designed so that the pad can be changed without lowering the garment, and so that the garment can be lowered for toileting. The legs of the pants should fit snugly to prevent leakage, but should not bind. Adult briefs may leak around the legs of a thin person. Families have found that using a toddler-sized diaper plus the absorbent section of an adult brief helps. Using a safety pin to attach the brief to the undershirt of a bedfast person will help contain a bowel movement. Some briefs have greater absorbency in the front for men, while others are more absorbent toward the back. Experiment to find the one that works best. It's important to wash your hands thoroughly with soap each time you care for a person. It may seem as if it is all in the family, but you can transmit infection to the person you're caring for, to yourself, and to others. Use disposable hand wipes for emergencies. Keep bottles of hand sanitizer in the bathroom, kitchen, and areas in which the person is cared for. In large cities, there are adult diaper services that save you the burden of washing these garments if you don't want to use disposable items. Disposable pads are available to protect bedding, and you can also buy rubberized flannel sheets. These are much less unpleasant than the rubber sheets used in the past. Plastic pants, plastic bags, or rubber sheets need to be shielded by a layer of cloth next to the skin. Without the protection of the cloth, plastic causes moisture to stay in contact